It's Amber Bradley, your host for the unscripted side of LP. It's Talk LP podcast time. It's TalkLP.com podcast time. Thanks for listening, everybody. Here with co-host Dave Thompson. What's going on?
How are you?
Wonderful. Wonderful. How are you?
I'm suffering from Zoom fatigue. I've stared at myself too dang long on the camera the last
few days. That's why we're not on Zoom today, listeners. And we need a haircut because we're both have been in lockdown forever. Yeah. But welcome to Talk LP Top 5.
And roll the Talk LP Top 5 jingle.
Totally pausing for the theme song because it is awesome. Welcome. We actually have a guest. Okay. We brought in an expert to talk about this ORC top five topic here. So Talk LP's top five things to consider ORC post COVID, right? I mean, super important. We're all still in lockdown, some states opening, but we brought in an expert today. John Mattis, welcome so much to TalkLP.com. You've heard some of these, so you know what you're in for today.
I do. I know what I'm in for. And I got to tell you that I gave myself an absolutely horrible haircut. So.
Oh, no. We need a headshot.
Good thing that there's no video attached to this.
Yeah, you better send us the current headshot because we want to know. But yeah, you're the perfect person to bring in for these top five ORC considerations post-COVID because, you know, everyone knows you. You're a veteran, you're a staple in the industry, an innovator when it comes to ORC, and just a phenomenal career. But in case you've been living in a rock and you don't know John Mattis, give us a little bit of your background, kind of what are you doing now, and then we will jump into this top five.
Okay, cool. So thanks for letting me be on the program. So I started maybe 35 years ago, which just sounds amazing. I don't really say that too often, but when I say it, it kind of scares me. But actually, I got into the loss prevention security at the time type work when I was a sophomore in college. And actually, I was a political science criminal justice major, and I had an internship in criminal justice. My internship was working as a store detective in what was Bambergers that would eventually become Macy's. And, you know, I got 3 credits for doing it. And when it was over, I stuck with it. But I got to tell you, you know, really the big thing with that was I can remember my second day on the job, no computers. And, you know, the orientation was a big binder. And I remember going through the binder. The first section was the organizational charts, you know, like how the Macy's Bambergers operation was structured. And, you know, the first name was the first title was obviously the number one person, director of security. And then the second one was director of internal investigation, special investigations unit. And, you know, and as I went through the job description and all the things that it was associated with it, you know, I said, you know what, that's the job that I want. I really want this job. And, you know,
and
I really was not familiar with it.
It has the sexiest title. Admit it. It did.
Yeah. And then 10 years later, I got that job. And I really did that job for quite some time, almost 20 years at Macy's. I was in that job and I loved every second of it. So I'm really into investigations. Those that know me know investigations. I bounced around a little bit. Bambergers, Macy's. I went to Abraham and Strauss, which later became Macy's. I went to Lord & Taylor, which at some point became Macy's. So it's like no matter where I went, sort of got sucked back into Macy's, which I'm still there. So that's just a real high level as to my background. But investigations, ORC, internal investigations, major crime type stuff has always been my passion. And luckily, I've been able to stay within this discipline for a really long time.
That's great, John. I think when we talk about sexy titles, first of all, co-host of Talk LP has got to rank up there. somewhere. I don't know. Especially with that jingle. I think we need a little dance to that when that comes on next time. John, I'm excited to have you on. I think your experience is incredible. You just discussed, and I like your goal setting and then accomplishing that. I think that's pretty neat. And when you were talking about the binder from training, I started thinking about my early days of catching shoplifters, having to climb up and look through a perch or a mirror in a stock room and look onto the sales floor. So crime is still existing from when you first started to today, but it's clearly in the ORC world. If we kind of kick it off with this, what drastic changes, I guess, have you seen from what ORC was when you first maybe learned of it to what the tackle is now? What is ORC now versus then?
You know, I think, you know, organized crime from a retail perspective has been around for a very long time. You know, it officially got its moniker like probably in the mid-90s. You know, but before that, you know, you know, we called them, you know, there were maybe some different host nations that would come in and you know, that would be associated with theft, you know, like South American groups. There was gypsies. There was lots of different types of groups that were organized in some low-level fashion. You know, but that was really the birth of ORC, and it has just proliferated every single year since then, to the point now where it is organized retail crime today is much different than its actual definition. You know, and so, you know, I'm a big proponent of trying to update that definition of what organized retail crime is. But it is beyond the normal professional shoplifter today. And it is very much into all different types of organized conspiratorial attacks on retail, whether it's in a brick and mortar, whether it's online, whether it's cyber, whether it's con games, things like that, that are always out there and that have been out there, but are just gotten so much more advanced every single year. So, you know, the types of things that you see besides the shoplifting and the organized cargo thefts, on the organized frauds, the identity theft, the cyber scams, the credit breaches that are all organized criminal enterprises, you know, all need to fall into that organized retail crime definition. Because, you know, as retail has changed, you know, when organized retail crime first started, obviously there was no e-commerce, it was all brick and mortar. And anything that is out there that retailers put out there to make the shopping experience, the customer experience easier, will be exploited and capitalized on by ORC groups long before it actually takes foot with our customers. So, you know, and there's a lot of that out there, whether it's buy online, pick up in store, ship to store, obvious mail theft from all of the e-commerce operations, you know, all of that funnels around organized retail crime, and the ORC phenomena keeps evolving to the point where when you really sit down and you look at the definition and you'd be able to incorporate all of those different parameters and different types of thefts and frauds, the overall cost to the nation is much higher than what we advertise.
Well, that's incredible. You talk about, you know, and clearly your background comes through in your description here, because that, you know, it goes from people even not understanding that it was organized crime. You know, it wasn't just, oh, hey, that guy actually wants to shoplift 95 boxes of acetaminophen or Prilosec, right? I mean, so evolution of actually identifying, naming ORC into what you just described, which is very sophisticated ORC criminals evolving before it even hits the bottom line of how it's impacting in a positive way the shopper experience. So if you think about kind of where we are in this COVID-19 and its immediate impact on the economy, what is your top five? And, you know, if it goes over five, that's cool. But what are your thoughts on things that retailers really should be expecting? You know, because people are talking about an epidemic of ORC, you know, sweeping the country once things come out of lockdown. Like, what are your thoughts on what we will see and what retailers need to be thinking about?
Sure. Well, if you think about it today, so you have supermarkets open today, and you have pharmacy open today, you know, which are really two big victims of organized crime. So, you know, you can still see that activity today. As far as other retailers that are shut down, you know, that may have their e-commerce operation open, but no brick and mortar. I think what you're going to see, obviously, is there's some pent up frustration with theft and fraud. So that as soon as stores open their doors post COVID, that's when you're really going to see your biggest impact. So really, I would think that the first 3 to 4 weeks of a brick and mortar opening is when they're most susceptible, because obviously there's a lot of pent up theft and fraud that has not happened that normally would have taken place in a brick and mortar. So that's the thing that you would see. So, you know, when you break it down into, you know, a top five, obviously what we would call door hits or major hits, lots of merchandise that is walking out of a particular physical building is the number one thing to look for. It's not going to be the onesies and twosies that'll happen. It will definitely be large hits. Because, you know, they're just like, you know, every American or any American that is either on furlough or unemployed or let go has financial responsibility. So do the bad guys. Got to make up on that. And that's really what, that's probably the number one thing that you'll see. Stores need to be apparent, aware of it. And management needs to make sure that their colleagues, that their employees are aware that this will be,
Do we lose him?
I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. You're back. You just said this will be, and I was like,
It was a great point.
And then you cut out. Yeah, it was a great point.
I think I was saying this will be the number one thing that needs to be communicated by the leadership teams in each of these retailers to their store teams as far as what to look for. So groups coming in, flash mobs, pre-opening, as soon as the doors open type thing. That's usually when the biggest thefts are, post, you know, right close to closing, that type of thing.
Yeah, I think that's a good tip. Good tip, John, is I know even internally here, we're trying to think of what's our reopening plan. I know a lot of retailers are going through that now, but for the AP and LP professionals out there is trying to start to strategize, how do we mitigate that and react to it? This is a tricky one, a question that I've heard come up the last couple of days from retailers, and I don't know if there's a solution yet, but making an apprehension in a not only a hands-off atmosphere, but a social distancing atmosphere.
That's a great question.
It seems to be difficult. So I don't know if you have a magic wand on how to solve that, but any discussions or thoughts behind, you know, shoplifters thinking, well, you can't even come near me, let alone bring me back into custody in some way.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you really look at it, retailers and who actually has in-house asset protection, and of those retailers, the ones that are pro apprehension versus pro deterrent, you know, I think that, you know, in 2020, you're looking at a very small number of overall retailers that are pro apprehension, that will make apprehension on the spot versus calling police and letting the police handle those type things. So, you know, Macy's obviously is one of those that are pro apprehension, and those one of the things that are in significant discussion with our training group and is how we'll handle those type things.
Well, it's a crazy thing that everybody's now dealing with, because now, you know, I feel like I'm full on like car keys, wallet kind of thing when I'm walking into a store, because I got the hat on now because I need a haircut, got sunglasses, you know, you got the mask. Like now what? Everybody looks like they're going to take you down. And I guess, does that go back to training? Like, how do you tackle that when you're also dealing with all the additional labor you have to provide, making sure people are social distancing, figuring out queues for lines, maybe in your situation, fitting rooms? How do you also deal with that?
I think it's a matter of going back to the basics, you know, so, you know, there's no shoplifter or external theft profile that's out there. It's all based on behaviors. So, you know, most all of the behaviors are physical actions. You know, obviously, what a customer or a customer that, you know, is really a shoplifter, it's all about behaviors. And whether they have a mask on or not, those physical behaviors will be apparent if you go back to the basics of what we all learned when, you know, we first started in this business and in how we identify suspicious behavior. So, you know, there's no physical description. It's all about the behaviors that are displayed. So I think it's important that for our AP folks out there, store detectives, investigators that are involved with these things every single day, that they continue to go by their training, let their training guide them as to making sure that we're looking at behaviors and not what they look like.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's a great point, John. One thing I've been hearing a lot about the masks that Amber brought up is, so a lot of technology, a lot of solution providers out there that have facial recognition software, and you know, even just going back to old school of passing bolos around and having pictures of, you know, known boosters in the area. And it seems like the mask might make that a little bit more difficult of identifying those trends in these ORC cases as easily as we did in the past. And then also, I know you've got a passion on internal investigations as well. And I know it's kind of on the same page of ORC. When we think about interviewing a shoplifter or an employee, again, we're starting to deal with this no contact stuff, right? How do you sit down with a shoplifter and get their ID without having a contact, you know, contactless right, and information? So I don't know if you, and it doesn't have to be specific, I guess, to Macy's, but in just your general experience handling these investigations or interviews, whether it's remotely or adapting to the current environment.
You know, it's interesting from an internal perspective because, you know, obviously, you know, investigations and how you identify internal theft, you know, obviously doesn't change at all. However, how you deal with it, you know, that's obviously where our biggest opportunity is. So, you know, there's a lot of retail investigators out there today that are using telephone interviewing to their advantage. That obviously will continue. Video, Skype type interviews will continue. Whatever a retailer sets forth as their policy on how a one-on-one physical interview will take place, including how the witnesses will be handled. Obviously, that is open for debate. But, you know, there is a big internal theft opportunity once stores open that will most probably fall into the category of how do you get your hands on green money? You know, so, you know, there's still theft opportunity out there, but think about the motivation of a employee that's coming back that has been furloughed. They may be upset about the fact that they were furloughed. There may be some retribution that is out there. And the most important thing for most employees that have been furloughed is the financial piece of it. So cash theft will be a big opportunity. So, and cash theft comes in lots of different forms, whether it's straight taking cash out of the register, whether it's covering it with a void, fraudulent cash return, stealing a bank deposit, opening bank, you know, all of those different ways to get their hands on green cash money will be the biggest vulnerability to our stores post-COVID. There's no doubt about that. You know, common sense would tell you that. And, you know, when you look at fencing operations and things like that, you know, if you have a fencing operation, if you get 60-70%, 70 cents on the dollar for something that you fence, you know, you've had a good day. If you steal cash, you know, you're getting 100 cents on a dollar, and without having to walk out of the store with anything other than the cash in your pocket, and not having to put yourself at risk and trying to fence the merchandise. So that is going to be the number one theft opportunity and exposure to our stores when we open.
Man, that's a lot of great content there. And I definitely feel like You're totally right. Back to the basics, but you also have to be innovating too with and be thinking about all of the things that how do you take the basics, implement those, make sure they're spot on, and then innovate with the new I don't know, MO that you're gonna see after all this hits. Because you're right, I mean, a bad economy affects everybody. I mean, isn't it even the people that might make, they're eight, what is it, 80% good, but given, the circumstances would make a bad decision.
Right.
And, and when you're having pressure to feed your family, that might be a pretty big motivator.
Yeah,
So, you
absolutely.
think about all the things that people and all types of professionals listening up and down the ladder. If you had advice to kind of think about professional organizations, whether they be related to ORC to kind of help with resources or not, like what would be some of the things that you find to have been helpful in your career or have evolved throughout the industry that have become really great resources? What would be some advice that you could give for either people in your, executive chair or kind of all the way up and down the ladder?
Well, I think the most important thing is aside from the basic networking, which is obviously something that we're not seeing now with RILA and NRF and some of the trade shows and annual conferences not happening, is the ability to use some of the organizations and overall resources. So when I say resources outside of organizations, Talk LP podcasts,
Yeah, buddy.
LP
Nice.
magazine, D&D
Good one.
Daily. They're all of that, all including yourself and the others. They're all posturing themselves to be able to talk about these things, talk about what works, what doesn't work, what we'll see, what we potentially won't see, how to handle certain situations, and those forums are set up for that particular purpose. And most all focused now on post-COVID and how do we deal with the onslaught of theft and fraud that we anticipate happening out there. So, I definitely recommend obviously those top three. And then aside from that is to utilize your trade organizations. So whether it's the National Retail Federation, the Retail Industry Leaders Association, even when it comes down to ORC, looking at CLEAR and some of the regional orcas that are out there are all out there to be able to share information, share intelligence, and share best practice. So, and it really the only way to get through this is to be able to share with your fellow retailer as to what we're seeing, what we're not seeing, and where our opportunities are, because no one's got the recipe on the 100% recipe on how to handle this. It's going to take trial and error, and it's also going to take some creative thinking and some different out of the box thought process on how we will deal and handle and approach and strategize how we'll handle post-COVID theft and fraud. So really the message really in all of that is reach out, be a partner, utilize the forums, utilize the resources, and through this, all of our participation will be able to get through this.
That's great feedback, John. I think a great list of resources. I mean, we've heard from a lot of industry experts the last few weeks, and it seems like they all end with the same, which is positive, the same kind of mantra of stay connected, stay engaged with the team and with the industry. And now more than ever is the time to collaborate, for these solutions. And I think the other thing that we've always ended with something like this, but not only stay engaged and connected, that can get a little hectic. So people got to take care of themselves and have a bit of a mental break during this crazy time. So I gotta ask you, John. I know, and especially in a leadership role,
Here comes the mental break,
there's a lot of
everybody.
stress, a lot of stress right now. So I gotta know. Typically, I go down the football angle here, but I'm curious if you did the quarantine haircut. So I think we've already promised our listeners that we're gonna post that picture soon. I think that was in the contract here. But what else are you doing, John, to just kind of relax and kick back? You turned into a Netflix junkie. Did you watch the NFL draft on Zoom, or what's John Mattis doing to relax?
I actually did none of that. You know, I'm used to, you know, 30 plus years in the industry, my biggest issue being at home all the time was not being regimented to a calendar and, you know, what, and being able to have everything scheduled for me. So my big thing is that I need projects. I need to accomplish something at the end of the day. Otherwise I feel like a loser. I need to be, right. I need to accomplish stuff. So I spent the last couple of weeks converting a room in my house into my personal office, man cave,
nice
personal space that I'm in right now.
Barbershop.
And I swear to God, I don't think I've spent more than an hour total in 15 years in this room. And now I'm here all the time. I love it. It's my own space. It's got all my stuff. And, you know, I look forward to, even though I'm on furlough, I'm still doing lots of things in the industry. And I look forward to going into my space and doing work. So, you know, accomplishing things, you know, taking up a hobby. I've spent a lot of time trying to get more physically fit, that you sort of, when you work in retail, you sort of put off to the side and it's not always on forefront on your mind. So I've been able to do that as well. But I think the biggest thing that I had a problem with was scheduling things, making sure that I say, okay, I'm going to, you know, this is the time I wake up. This is when I have breakfast. This is when my 15th cup of coffee. I'm going to go to the gym here, or not even go to the gym, go to the track, work on my office, do something else. I prepare all of the meals in this house. So I've taken on some different role and I'm really relishing it, and I'm really enjoying myself.
Nice.
So I know I have to go back to work soon, but in the meantime, I'm learning a lot of new things and I'm trying to make the most of it. The last thing I want is go back to work with a bad haircut, but I don't want to go back fatter than I left.
Why?
You know, those are some of my motivations.
That's great.
No, good for you, because I think everyone's going to emerge in either one of two camps. It's either going to be fatter or thinner. And man, right. I will not be the latter. So I'm one of those that eats my stress. So don't hate on it, guys. I'm not really worried about it. But good for you though, because I appreciate the projects, and that's kind of where I'm at too. But I did slip in some Tiger King watching, I'm not gonna lie. But we totally appreciate your time today, John. Thank you so much for addressing such a major concern, I think, across the industry as everybody comes out of lockdown and starts to reopen in the new normal. So thank you so much for being our guest. Thank you,
Thanks
Dave
so
Thompson,
much, guys. I had a great time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Absolutely. Tune in next time for our next Talk LP Top 5. If you have a Top 5 you want us to address, hit us up on Twitter at Let's Talk LP, or, you know, tag us on LinkedIn. Dave Thompson's on there. I'm on there. So let us know what you want to hear, and we will talk at you later. Thanks for listening. Cause no one can do it like